Okay. This is some work that resulted, it was sort of a side project as part of a bigger project, and is mostly the student's work. Cecilia is from Chile, has been working with me for a couple years, and is very interested in how students learn and how we can evaluate their misconceptions and the way that we teach them to sort of address some of those misconceptions. So just a brief overview, I'm going to just talk a little bit about why it matters, the concepts we're focusing on, the couple things that we tried, and then what the implications are for teaching. So this stemmed out of a USDA Higher Ed Challenge Grant project, where we were building three different sets of modules or games for horticulture, animal science, and food science, which are the three areas of our FFA Advanced Life Science Curriculum project areas. So I was the content person on the plant science part of this. And so this diagram here is one of the assessments that we built. And all the bubbles are drag and drop as part of that game. And so as we were building these, trying to figure out what the right assessment was to go with those games, we started trying out some different things in class because I was teaching Hort 101, the intro class, at the same time. So they're kind of related, but this is a little side project. Well, it's always fun to have the side projects that come out of the big projects. So the concepts that we were focusing on in the game were photosynthesis and respiration, which, as you know, can be abstract, can be hard for students to learn, can be hard to teach simplified but well, because I teach an intro hort class where I have a whole bunch of non-majors and just a few majors. And so in an effort to keep it simple enough to teach the major or the non-majors, I sometimes don't always get the terminology correct. I tend to get a little sloppy, if you will, with just exactly how to explain it, because you're trying to bring those non-majors along. So it gets a little tricky. But what we do know about students' misconceptions about photosynthesis and respiration, and what we're primarily focusing on, is how those two processes are connected or interconnected. And so the students have lack of knowledge about how they're connected, about what happens at the biochemical level. And the whole idea of gas exchange with oxygen, carbon dioxide is really abstract. That's hard for them. And then the lack of knowledge about plants being able to make their own food. And then you get into definitions of some of these words. What is food? When we say plants make their own food, I'm assuming that I'm thinking of sugars. They're thinking of, well, food that we eat, or they're thinking about, you know, we tell them they have to take up nutrients and water, and all those things get mixed up in that term food. So again, even what I discovered in working with Cecilia, because what she started to do was come to class with me every time, and we debriefed on the walk back to my office, were just even the definitions and how we use specific words. The word food, even something as simple as that, can be very confusing to an undergrad student who is not a major, when in my head it's very clear to me what I mean by food, but it may or may not be clear to them. So just some of those little things. So this whole idea of using concept maps and assessing misconceptions, none of that is real new. What's different is how we're applying it, I think. As I was thinking about how I wanted to phrase that, I think the difference here is for how we can apply it. So concept maps are this nifty way to show relationships between concepts. I was never taught with concept maps, or somewhat in terms of education, somewhat of a newer concept. And so it helps them see those connections. Again, so if we're focused on connections, concept maps was a way for us to do that. And Cecilia was in a class where she was learning about developing assessments. And so we sort of had all of this stuff hooked together. And so, as I mentioned, I have a large service course where I have 120 Hort 101 students, where I have probably 20 to 30 of them are College of Ag students, and the rest of them are liberal arts and other college students, so theater and English and comm and all of those kinds of students. And so the first thing that Cecilia did was look at what their misconceptions were, and she was able to use an existing survey to do that. Then we took what they answered in those misconceptions and used that to create this assessment and this study tool. So the initial survey, just to uncover the misconceptions, was modified from this existing survey, and we got about half of the class to participate in taking this part of the survey. So what happens is we teach Hort 101 both in the fall and the spring at Purdue, and I teach in the fall and my colleague teaches in the spring, and so we just put things up onto Qualtrics, which is the online. I know some of you are familiar with Qualtrics, and then we'll offer them an option for extra credit. So sometimes you get higher rates than that, but we thought that was enough to at least get us going. Again, this is a sort of a little pilot offshoot, so not big amounts of data because we just were sort of feeling our way through that. So then we took the misconceptions that they answered on that survey and used them to build this what we're calling as a semi-structured concept map, where there's some multiple choice mixed together with the actual concept map. So we're not asking them to build it from scratch, we're giving them a structure. And then we did this assessment with the lab that I teach, which includes my majors and my College of Ag students. So I teach the lecture and then I teach one section of lab. So those are my kids, I claim them. They officially become my kids for the rest of their college career. And so because we were teaching them in a smaller group, that's the group we chose to do this assessment with. So one of the things that I find is really difficult is to write really good multiple choice questions, right? I was trained as a scientist, I was not trained as an educator, never learned how the right way was to write multiple choice questions or to write them well. Anybody can write a multiple choice question, but can you write a good multiple choice question? That's always the key. So a couple terms, distractors, those are the wrong answers, right? But they need to be good wrong answers. They can't be, you know, the little brown fox jumped over the river as the wrong answer, because that doesn't, you know, they can clearly find that one very quickly. So what we did were take some of the misconceptions that they answered on that first survey and use those to as the distractors, as their misconceptions, and use those as the distractors in those multiple choice questions. So we addressed content validity. Chromebox Alpha is kind of crummy because we didn't have a lot of students. So this is an example. This is a student's answers on a semi-constructed map where you can see there were some multiple choice questions and there was a structure where they had to answer some things, and then we wanted them to write short answers. And so where we learned some really interesting things were where they had to explain their answer, which they couldn't do. They could guess the right multiple choice, but they couldn't explain how they got to that answer. So that right there tells me that they're not getting it. They're not getting it at the level I need them to get it as, particularly my my major students. And so I'm going to show a couple graphs. And the interesting thing is that the total number of points they could get were 10. You'll notice both of these graphs only go to 5 because they didn't get them right. So now again, we were sort of just trying out these assessments, and it wasn't tied directly to lecture because I had lectured about photosynthesis at the beginning of the semester, and this was towards the end of the semester, so it was a little bit of a disconnect. But yeah, they didn't get it. They didn't get they got the multiple choice ones, but they didn't get the points for the short answers. And so those are those two graphs that are there. Some of the other misconceptions that we detected beyond what was in the original survey were things like photosynthesis gives energy. Well, sort of. Plants use CO2 during respiration. Well, kind of. But not exactly. Respiration is opposite to photosynthesis. Okay, that was partly my fault, because in an effort to try to simplify it for the non-majors, I talked to them about, you know, photosynthesis is the opposite of respiration, right? Which it's not exactly, but if you're trying to think about how to explain it to a theater major, and have them at least grasp the idea, that was where I started. So there's still huge amounts of them are coming in with respiration only happens in the dark. I think that's a figment of teachers having been educated 20 and 30 years ago, and that information's not changing in the high school level, right? And that the goal of photosynthesis and respiration is to produce energy to keep the plant alive. Well, yeah, kind of, but again. So there were some interesting things. So this is an example of one of the ones we used in class. This one's actually for when we were talking about seed structure and dormancy and how those things worked, where, and I used this as a study guide before the exam. So it was like the review session, the session before the exam, when we were talking about these topics, where, again, we gave them the structure and they had to try to fill in the blanks. And we had them work together and do that. So I don't know if anybody's real familiar with concept maps. Is often you don't even give them this original concept maps. You don't give them any of this. They just need to draw their own map, which for me is daunting. So we started with these semi-structured, and as we get them kind of used to using it, then we'll. Oops, there's my timer. then we'll switch over to using less and less of the structure. But right now we're scaffolding, right? We're getting them used to that idea. So we know that Cronbaugh's alpha was low. That's not we didn't expect it to be big. Again, if you ask them too many questions, you get mental fatigue. Again, not unexpected. Comparisons across the groups was not exactly our goal. We were really interested in how the students were learning, so it didn't really matter so much what happened between the non-majors and the majors. We really just wanted to see what they were learning. And the idea about different ways to ask these questions, can you use short answers? We use the students' multiple choice responses to build out other maps, so there's ways that you can add in some of those things to get some specifics. The survey helped us learn about misconceptions, and then also part of it was me. Part of this was also another part of the study was how do you, as a professor teaching these intro concepts, how do these games and different assessment methods help you as a teacher? So part of it was also my own learning, and it helped me think about how I teach and the words that I use and the vocabulary that I use and what's in my head and is really obvious to me after teaching that class for 15 years is not always obvious to the incoming student, and I have to try to remember that when I'm teaching. So these are some things just about the assessment, because she was, again, she was working in an assessment class, so she was real focused on that. And sometimes when it gets to be real hard to write good wrong answers, you could go to a multiple choice with an ABC instead of an ABCD, which is generally what's recommended. So really the part about this that I think is important is giving the students the visual learning, right? Being able to use the diagrams, the figures, the concept maps, the structured concept maps, have them visually think about that. So much of what they do in their world right now is technology and computers, and everything's visual, right? And so let's give them some of those things to do in class to help them figure out how to work through those. So, and then again, the other thing for me always to remember is simplify, but don't simplify it so that it's wrong, which is very, very fine line to walk if any of you have to teach that other group of students. So so I'm going to stop, and I think a couple minutes for questions. Okay. Questions? Fire away.
I thought you were smiling at someone.
Nope.
So you have the conceptual maps that you use for testing. Did you use conceptual maps in class?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So we actually, the one last one that I showed, we actually used as a group activity in class.
Okay.
And then we figured out how to build little short versions of those as multiple choice questions, where it just had like four things in line and they had to guess the right order or know the right order. And so she helped me figure out how to write those as multiple choice, because again, it's 120 students and I put a couple short answers on, but I can't grade that many short answer tests. So we figured out how to modify them to put them in as examples as multiple choice.
So I would think that the process of having students do the maps.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Correct. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to practice with them, and then we actually had them do them as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.